Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno, not to be confused with the famous Mike Bongiorno, who was the host of Italian late night shows and Italian Wheel of Fortune.
No, is he still with us?
No, he is very much not with us.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I'm not him.
Okay.
But
and
he
never will be.
But he does keep me from being Googleable.
Oh, okay.
You'll have pages and pages of him. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Is that? Yeah, I was going to ask. Because like,
it keeps my sins in the dark. In the dark. That's the voice of Miss Janine Gagliardi.
That's right.
Janine, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm glad. Usually you're like, oh, I've got some sort of horrible disease. Oh.
Well, no, I had good medical news today.
Oh, good. Something good?
The airing of the grievances. No, yeah. Oh, God. Here we go. I recently...
This segments are daily aches and pains.
Daily aches and pains. Here we go. I recently lost hearing a little bit in one of my ears. And
great start.
Great, yeah. So, but I was like very congested at the time. So I was like, oh, it's just congestion. Uh-huh. But then I went to the ENT and he's like, there's no sign of congestion in your ear. So I'm like, so what? And I had an audiologist test it. And she's like, yeah, no, you have hearing loss in that ear. And I was like, oh no. And then he was like, well, because you were congested, let's just give you a round of steroids just in case it was congestion and let's see what happens. And then I started feeling fine. And then I went back to the audiologist today. And my hearing is perfect again. So
congratulations. Yay. I really mean that. I would feel the exact way you feel.
I was at sea. I was like, wow, it's so weird. I'm like, I guess I just have to live with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'd be super bummed with having to deal with that.
I know. And I'm like so blind. But
Is that true?
Yeah, very much so. And I've had like torn retinas and stuff. But it's never bothered me because I lived with it my whole life. Right. And I was just kind of like reframing it in my head. Yeah. I'm like, this wouldn't bother me if it was my life, right? It just bothers me now because it's sudden. But I'm sure I'll be fine. Right. Like if I lost a limb, of course I'd be bummed out about it. But like people live full lives and they get used to it.
It's interesting.
Like,
you were getting ready to deal with it. But then when you didn't have it, you're like, oh, thank God that was something.
Yeah, no. Well, it's true, right? But
that's life.
I know. But we're starting to approach the age where like these things are, they just happen and then they don't go away. Like it's just going to happen. So
yeah.
I have to like get used to it in my mind that these health things will just kind of happen now.
Yeah. This is not a humble brag. I work out, not a lot, but pretty consistently. I work out twice a week.
Okay.
I lift weights a lot. But all it does is maintain.
Right.
Like
so you could just be where you are now.
Yeah. Like it makes me feel.
But it does things for your health.
5 years younger, maybe.
Yeah.
It makes me feel a little bit like I can move a little
bit
better.
Good for energy.
Yeah. But it makes me think, like, if I had this dedication to working out when I was younger, who knows what could have happened? I could have had the world.
You could have had the whole world.
But all I'm doing now, I guess I'm building a little bit, but what I'm doing, all I'm doing now basically is trying to, it's like, oh, just imagine a person on the beach trying to keep the tide from coming in. That's really all it is.
It's true. I know. But you know what? I've heard that your 50s are better than your 40s because in your 40s, everything kind of starts to break down. But by your 50s, you've corrected it all or like you are on medication to address it. And then you feel okay again.
You know what's new for me? Like spots. Like I don't know. Liver spots.
Oh, that's just going to keep happening.
Or what? Just skin damage.
Just
being in the sun is horrible for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I had the shingles, I have like scarring from the shingles, and I just my feet. You know, I'm starting to look like Bill Murray.
Visible,
I look terrible.
Just, like, I know the shingles. It just.
I feel like I look like Bill Murray.
You don't look like Bill Murray.
I feel like it's.
If you did, Peter would be even more.
He'd like
to
me
see
even
you.
More. Yeah,
and he's pretty stoked about it now.
I do remember him saying, "You're Jack Black." It wasn't a question. It was a statement.
He said that to you?
Yeah. So when you guys saw Minecraft, did he think it was me in the movie?
No. He thought it was our plumber, Dave, who also has been told many times that he's Jack Black, including by Michael Strahan.
So he just, when he sees a fat guy with a beard, he's
like,
you're
Jack
Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when he said that to me. I was like, all right, I don't know how to take that.
Yeah. It's. Yeah.
The not being a question was interesting to me.
I feel just like kids are bad at like differentiating people, right? Like I don't know anyone with a beard.
I'm
is
a
Jack
type.
Black.
Yeah, like
anyone...
oh, you're a fat guy with a beard. I know your type.
Yeah,
you're Jack Black.
It's well, yeah.
You are Jack Black.
They're bad with that. Yeah. Anyone with glasses is Rick Moranis to them.
That's hilarious. But anyway, so this episode of PCMC is about the most devastating.
This is your idea. Don't put this evil on me. I'm not trying to depress everybody.
This isn't a depressing episode, I don't think. Now, I will say this.
I think it will be a depressing episode.
No, but it's going to be super fun. a couple caveats.
Okay.
Caveat one. Yes. The New York Times did an article like this very recently.
Really? Oh, I didn't read it. Okay.
But I had this idea first. Oh. But we are probably, both me and the New York Times are probably reacting to the new season of The Last of Us.
Oh.
Which leads me to caveat two, which is this is going to be spoilers for everything. Okay. If you're not a spoiler person, don't listen to this episode.
Okay.
Because we're going to spoil everything under the sun, okay? So Pedro Pascal's character dies in episode two of season two. And
now I knew
people had feelings about it. And it's a brutal death.
I only know this because I never played the games. I don't watch the show.
Yeah.
I know about it because the day after Peter was born, I was in the hospital. Peter was sleeping. He was sleeping for hours that day. It was great.
Sure.
You
remember it's the best day of your life.
It's the best day of my life. Henry was home with grandma. It was COVID. Mm. So no one could visit us in the hospital. And so Bill and I just had a day with a sleeping newborn. And it was incredible. We had nowhere to be. We were just in the hospital. And you released the episode with Abe.
Yes, talking about
The Last of Us. And we just listened to it uninterrupted. And I clearly remember it because now I'm like, I have to be driving a car or I have to be doing something else. The last time I could like really focus on something. Yeah. And it was that episode. So I knew that.
Yeah.
He was a great guest. You should have him back.
I should. He's just a busy guy. He's got a high powered job.
Oh.
But yeah, I will have him back. So here's the thing about this episode. It's not just like, oh, I got sad when Mufasa died. Like
thanks a lot, Mike.
Ah, fuck. That's fine.
I did get sad when Mufasa died.
I mean, I did too. But I tried to pick deaths that I truly were surprised by. Things I did not see coming.
Mm-hmm.
And things where some of the cases in this, I couldn't accept it. I was like, oh, this is going to be a dream. They're going to come back.
Oh, that's interesting.
Some of these, one of these in particular, I really was like, no. This can't be. This can't really be happening.
Yeah.
So I really mean the word devastating.
Okay. No, for me, it was more the emotional impact of like my response to it.
Sure, okay.
And frequently you will be hearing a story about how I cried in public or something.
Oh, okay, good.
So, okay.
Let me start because I want to just get the obvious one out of the way.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Which is Joel from The Last of Us.
Okay.
But the game. I don't watch the show, although I did watch the death scene because I wanted to see if it was the same as in the game, which it was. It was just as brutal.
Uh-huh.
But in the game, you're playing it. So that's why when people ask me, I've said this on the show before.
Which character are you during that scene?
Well, it's a cut scene, but I believe you're Joel.
You're Joel. So you get into the situation
and you've been Joel for the whole first game.
Wow.
And now you die. But here's the real painful thing. You get killed by Abby. And then the game asks you to be Abby. You play as the person who just killed you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if me and Abe are talking about this. At the end, the two main characters are fighting each other. And it's the first time in video game, I can ever remember a video game where like I have to press the button to make them fight, but you care about them so much you don't want to.
Yeah.
And
you're like trying to pull a punch.
It really plays with the psychology of video games.
That's brilliant.
So, like everyone else, you don't see it coming. I mean, it happens like not at the very beginning, mm-hmm. like towards the middle of the second game. And it's also like it's kind of deep because he kind of deserves it.
Mm.
Because the story of the first game is it's a post-apocalyptic world. There was a zombie outbreak and he becomes the sort of Papa Bear to this cub, a lone wolf to this cub.
He always is, isn't Pedro Pascal? That's what he does.
And
takes care of a little baby.
Yeah, Ellie. And Ellie, for some reason, got bit and never changed.
Right.
So she's like the savior. And his job is supposed to be to get her and bring her to this lab where they're going to synthesize whatever's in her blood to save the world.
Right.
But along the way, he grows to love her and see her as a daughter. Because his daughter actually dies in the very beginning.
Right.
When he gets there, he finds out that the doctors have to kill her and take out her brain.
It's her brain. Yeah. Okay.
And he instead kills all the doctors.
Yeah.
So he kind of... You do it. He does it because he loves her and he doesn't want her to die. But really, he dooms the entire world and all existence for one person. And then he lies to her about it because she asks if that happened. And he's like, no. You know, it was... Yeah, I forget what he tells her. So he kind of deserves it. And I believe Abby...
Isn't she the child of one of the doctors?
Yeah, she's that he killed, that he just murdered. And she sees it as this was the cure to zombieism and you threw it away.
And also, you killed my father, so it's very personal.
Yeah, and she...
Or mother. I shouldn't assume that a scientist is a man.
Yes.
Even though everything about this day and age is telling me I should.
Yes. And she beats him to death with a golf club. It's brutal in the game and the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just playing it. It came out in 2020, and I played it in 2020.
People hated that character too because she was very masculine.
Yeah.
Like mask coded. And people were like, is this a trans character? I remember there was like some, because she's like super muscular.
There was the shitty neck beard.
Trolly internet.
It's like the people who don't like the girl who plays. I shouldn't say girl because I believe they're non binary. But. People don't like the person who plays Ellie in the show because they feel like the video game character is hotter.
Well, yeah.
They're like, I don't...
We definitely want to, you know, fuck a child in a video game.
They're like, I don't want to fuck that kid, so I don't like them.
Yeah, that 12-year-old that I want to fuck. Isn't that great?
It's crazy that these men are openly like, I don't want to fuck that kid.
They're
and I've got
45 if they're a day.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
It's wild. It's a wild world we live in. So that's... I just want to throw that out there. It was shocking. I remember playing. I remember being like, this can't be. That's the thing. This can't be.
Yeah.
He can't die. This is the protagonist.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't want to give an example because you might use it. But it's not a situation where it's like they die right away. It's they die like towards the middle of the second thing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, fuck, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Now who am I?
Who am I now without this person?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm trying to think of like, I've thought that on so many occasions, like that this can't be, like being in denial about it.
Yes,
and also, I think we're so conditioned to think that we should be in denial about it because whether it's a fairy tale or if it's Marvel, like someone's coming back. Right?
You're waiting for Deus Ex Machina.
Oh yeah, something's going to come out and save this person.
Surely he is not going to be beaten to death with a golf club.
Yeah.
Surely... Someone's going to jump in and save him.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen. And it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. I think maybe the last time I felt that way was maybe the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. Like, not having read the books, I was going in totally blind. And then when it happened, after like maybe the second or third knifing, I'm like, oh, wait, they can't come back from that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, they could come back. Oh, maybe they'll survive. No, shit. No.
It's like the joke in Groundhog's Day where Bill Murray drives the truck over the ledge and he's like, Chris Elliott's like, he could have survived that.
Yeah,
and then it explodes. And he's like, probably not now. So what's your first one?
My first one is my biggest one probably, and it's Mufasa.
Mufasa.
Mufasa, Mufasa, Mufasa. Okay, so Mufasa, so let's see. The Lion King came out what year? I don't even know.
92?
Was it?
Okay. I'm just guessing.
Right,
I could be wildly wrong.
Good. 94. Okay, so I was Henry's age when it came out. So I was 7. And
so you're younger than me. I mean, it's not It's not like we're realizing that for the first time. But when I saw it as a kid, I had 3 years on you.
Yeah.
So you were like a real little
man
kid
of the world.
Yeah. I was like a worldly 10.
Yeah.
You were but a single digit 7.
It was probably my first devastating death in a film.
And in the theater you saw it?
In the theater, yeah.
Oh my.
So a lot of impact because, you know, the sound system's going.
Yeah,
That music is so intense.
There's a stampede.
The stampede
it's wild.
Scene is incredible, right? So it's like it's chaos, and the scene, or just a couple of scenes before, Simba goes into the elephant graveyard, and Mufasa has to come and save him, and then like gives him a real stern talking to, and he's like, "But you're never afraid," and he's like, "I was afraid today because I thought I might lose you," and he's like, "So you know that he felt fear." When he worries about his son. So we know he died in fear because he was worried about his son, right? And he keeps Mufasa keeps coming back in that scene. Like every time you think he's been licked, like he jumps
he's
out.
He's fighting. He's really fighting. It.
He gets Simba onto the ledge. So he's like, okay, my son is safe. No matter what else happens, my son is safe. I can get, you know, I can rest easy on that. But then he's still fighting. Like, he's going up the cliff. It's crazy. And Simba can see him. It's so dramatic. The music is so intense. And then, of course, Scar betrays him. But then Bill kind of blew my mind because he was like, yeah. And then your last thought is, my kid's in danger.
Right.
Because it's like, I've saved him. I'm okay. Oh, wait. Right before I died, my brother has betrayed me. My kid is not going to be safe. He's going to come after my kid and kill him. So it's like that last second thought of like, holy crap. You know, everything's gone wrong, basically. But that was just so devastating. The shot of Simba reacting is so intense, where it's like doing that Jaws thing of like zooming in and pulling out at the same time.
The dolly zoom.
He's so brave in that scene, Mufasa. He's like the world's greatest dad. And then that scene right after when
he's like,
everything's quiet. He's like, dad.
Yeah.
And he like kind of nuzzles against him. And then when Scar finds him, he's fully just like cuddling with his body.
Did little 7-year-old Janine, were you like, oh, he's going to come back?
I thought so for sure.
You couldn't accept.
No, I couldn't accept it. And then when
Rafiki, had you seen anyone die in a movie before?
I mean, I probably had, but that's the first one I really remember. I'm trying to think like, I mean, I had seen Bambi, but you don't really see it as intensely as the Mufasa one.
Yeah, you just hear it. Mufasa's, I mean, there's a betrayal. There's a lot happening.
And then when later in the film, when Rafiki is like, your father, he's alive. And I'm like, I knew it. I was so like,
you
convinced.
Were like, I knew it. It couldn't be. It can't be.
I knew he couldn't have gone away forever. But then I kept waiting for him to come back the whole movie. I still am. But yes, it was so devastating to me as an innocent film lover at the time to have this the best character ever just like ripped away from you. And of course, I wasn't aware of Hamlet at the time, so I had no idea that this was one-to-one retelling.
Yeah.
I found it. I still find it devastating to watch. I'm like, God, this scene is so good. It's also just really good. It's a well-made film, and it holds up.
It is. No, it's a great film. Yeah. I hope they never remake it.
I have terrible news.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's a foundational one.
It's a foundational one. I would say it's a foundational text in film death for a child, a wee child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what's scarier to a kid than their parent dying?
Right. It's your whole world.
It's a scary thing.
And especially
in the world.
Like your in his position, right? So his father's the king, and he's so wise, and he's so brave, and he looks up to him completely. Like, he's like a flawless character in his eyes. And then, you know, this happens right in front of you.
Yeah.
After he saved you, so now you feel guilty about it, too. Like, it's your fault.
All right, and Scar tells him it's his fault.
It's his fault. Oh, Simba. Jeremy Irons.
Okay. All right, so my next one.
Yeah.
Is a little different.
Okay.
Because it's not a character we really know.
Oh, okay.
The character, where was it? I believe, hold on. I want to make sure I get their dialogue correct. They only have one line. Master Skywalker, what are we going to do?
Stop it.
And of course, I'm talking about the youngling from Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
That's right.
Which just had it came back out because it was an anniversary.
That's right. We saw it in theater.
As did I. It's become a meme. Like, when I saw it in the theater just last week, some fucking kid clapped in that scene.
No.
Which was funny. But it's also like, oh, are you a fan of Star Wars or a fan of memes? Because all you're doing is clapping at memes.
He clapped
when Obi-Wan said hello.
Man, I wanted to be in your theater. Like, Bill and I were just like, like, he said it.
Well, you would have loved that kid then.
To democracy. It's all the stuff that we say.
Yeah.
And we've been watching the prequels a lot in this house. The kids are really popping off with Star Wars lately.
But if you remember before the memes, When you the first time you saw episode
it was a
three,
gut punch.
You're like, whoa.
You're like, oh shit.
You're like, oh, this is why this is the only Star Wars movie that's R-rated.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, R-rated?
Yeah.
I thought it was PG-13.
Oh, maybe it is.
You do see dead kids.
It is PG. No, it's PG-13. Really, but it's the unnerving. It's the strongest rated one.
Yes, it is.
The others are PG.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Yeah. It's a real school shooter vibe. Because
you don't need that. I mean, you know he's coming to kill him, but then coming into a room where there's a bunch of little kids,
yes,
and they go to him for help.
Hell, yeah, they have no fear of him because they know he's good.
And then
it's even more devastating.
And it's also devastating. It's also worse that you don't see it. You just see him ignite his lightsaber,
right,
and then that's it.
And the kid kind of jolts a little bit, like, yeah.
And then he murders them.
He murders them all. Yeah. And we have to see it to understand the depths to which he's sunk, right? We have to see it to understand how horrible he really has become, how he's transgressed so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kid who played him is named Ross Beedman. Mm-hmm. He wasn't named in the movie, but later on in Star Wars Legends, they named the character Sors Bandim, which is an anagram of the kid's actual name.
Okay.
And he was the son of a casting agent who just saw the casting call for like a young kid. And they just pick a kid who's very cute.
Very cute. He sort of looks like Anakin from Phantom Menace.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
He has that sort of, well, at the end, right? When he has the little crew cut and he's become a Padawan, like right at the very end. He looks like him.
Yeah.
And it's almost, and I think it's brilliant that they chose a kid that sort of looks so similar to him and not just, I do think it was intentional. I don't think it was just like they just picked a white blonde kid.
No, yeah.
I do think it's like the death of the self, right?
Like
he's killing the innocence, not only of these children, but he's killing his own innocence. He's killing this child who wanted to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
He's killing any of that. He's killing himself in that way.
Yeah. And seeing it 20 years ago in the theater, it was a palpable like, oh.
Yeah.
It was real. It might be, I mean, pre-Andor.
Yeah.
All right. It might be the darkest moment in the Skywalker nine.
I agree.
It's fucked up.
It really is.
It's crazy.
And then the aftermath when you see Yoda and Obi-Wan are just all laying on the ground.
When you watched it this time, were you like, where's Grogu?
Yes.
Because you know Grogu's somewhere.
Grogu's there. He's somewhere.
And he
he's
gets saved
away.
By...
And also the one from The Acolyte. What the heck is her name? Osha. Oh, not The Acolyte. The Obi-Wan series. What? Reva.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a million other...
Reba.
Reba, yes. They've shown Order 66 from a million different points of view.
Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, has it.
You know what? Turns out a lot of them got away.
Yeah, a lot did get away. So he was not very... anyway. I totally forgot, by the way, that there's a scene of Yoda...
And Obi-Wan outside the temple.
Outside the temple.
Me too, which I'm like, did they add that scene? Because I don't remember that
at all. I
don't remember
because it's badass. They're working their way in by killing...
They must have... Bill was like, I looked into it. They didn't add anything. So was
I never watching
that scene? Because
we were so devastated by
it
when that happened.
We've been watching the prequels. I'm like, am I always looking at my phone during that scene? Because I don't think I've ever seen it.
I was like,
this is so cool. Yes. And Bill, you were in the bathroom for that scene. So you've still never seen it. But even though you've watched the film many times.
I've definitely seen that scene before.
Yoda and Obi-Wan just like making their way into the temple.
Like
and
fighting,
killing
like, yeah.
the stormtroopers yeah, left
yeah,
and
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah,
that's
man.
So funny. I also didn't remember that.
Yeah, yeah, because it's badass. You're like, whoa,
yeah,
this is crazy.
Yeah,
you
cannot convince me they didn't add that.
Okay, they did. This is a real Shazam situation. Maybe in another universe. So give me another one of yours.
Okay, so this is like,
I'm working my way up, by the way, to the ones that hurt me the most.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't know if you are. You don't have to.
These are all very emotional. And you know, the thing that they have in common is that they are either, like a selfless heroic death or that there is some loss of innocence. And actually that's the common thread through all of them. There's a loss of innocence among all of them.
They're okay, sure.
Either an innocent character or they're representing the loss of innocence in some way. So the next one is sort of like a deep cut. I don't know how familiar you are with the film Legends of the Fall.
No, I'm not.
Okay. So 90s movie, sort of like a big epic sweeping drama about mm-hmm. three brothers who live out in the American West. And it's prior to the any kind of draft for World War One, but they decide mm-hmm. they want to sign up. And the youngest brother, who's played by Henry Thomas of E.T. fame, is Samuel. And he is really idealistic, and he wants to go to war because he believes it's a good cause. Mm. And so basically his father, who's played by Anthony Hopkins, is like, you can only go to war if your older brother signs up with you mm. because he could keep an eye on you out okay. there. So his older brother, Tristan, is played by Brad Pitt. So they go to war, and World War One is like, I love World War One terms of its representation in film, because I feel like we see World War Two all the time, but sure. World War One is like really fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think, obviously, Holocaust aside, I think more so than World War II, in the sense that everyone was in a trench. There's like barbed wire everywhere. Like, everyone's disgusting in the mud, like constantly, yeah. like, you know, in the European. Well, there's only the European yeah. theater, I guess, in World War One. But anyway, and there's like a lot of like sarin gas and stuff yeah. happening.
It's
like,
wild.
It's a crazy scene. So we get there. It's atrocious. And there's this. And it's also the nature of this death that is like so heartbreaking. So they were showing it in my English class in high school, of sure. all things. It's like an off day. Like, we were just watching a movie. And we stayed to watch the scene, my friend Lisa and I. And basically Samuel, there's like a firefight. There's some stuff is going on. And he gets blinded by this gas. Mm. So his eyes are sort of like milky looking, and he's kind of like fumbling his way through. And he gets caught in some barbed wire, and he can't see that like 20 feet mm. ahead of him are a pair of German soldiers that mm. are setting up a machine gun, like uh-huh. the big ones that you have to yeah. put together. And so, but he hears his brother, and his brother is coming, and his brother is like making his way through the forest and is uh-huh. shouting like, Samuel, Samuel. And he goes from being like freaked out that he's caught in the barbed wire to being hopeful. Mm. And then the last shot of him alive is like, he's smiling in the direction of his brother's voice. Like, my brother's coming to save me. Like, I know yeah. I'll be fine. And then he gets obliterated by a machine gun, and my friend Lisa and I were crying so hard.
How much do you see?
You see him get like shot up, and okay. it's not like gory, but it's okay. devastating. And then he's like hanging limp, but yeah. he's still upright because he's in barbed wire. And it's just it's a very brutal scene, but it's also just heartbreaking because yeah. he was so hopeful in his last moments of like, my brother's coming, my big brother's coming to get me. Oh. Like, I'm gonna be okay. And yeah. it's like, no, he died. And it was and then Tristan goes on a rampage, of course,
sure, sure, sure,
and starts, because he lived in the American West, and he his family was very connected to the Native Americans who mm. lived like on with them. So he goes and he scalps all the German soldiers that are in the neighboring
sure.
camp.
Sure,
you know,
sure,
he's
sure,
collecting
sure, sure.
scalps basically at that point.
What, like you do.
Like you do. But I've always been affected by it. And sure. Anytime I've seen it since, I'm like, oh God, this one, I can't watch this one. This one tore me apart. But yes, the Samuel death in Legends of the Fall. And it's like a very, you know, it becomes a very romantic movie.
Okay, yeah.
But then
that's
there's also like
yeah.
gangsters and crime in it. It goes all over the place. But yeah.
What year did that come out?
I think it's also maybe like 94 or some similar time frame. But I didn't see it then. I saw it when I was in high school.
Is there a book?
You know, there might
be. Or was
be.
It just the laziest fucking teacher that was like, oh, this is kind of literary ish
yeah, this is dramatic, like this is a melodrama. It was 1994 also. 94. All my deaths are gonna happen in 1994.
Oh my God, what a year for you.
What a
although
year.
You didn't see it then.
That's true. Yeah. And it, okay, let's see, is it based on a book? Based on the novella by Jim Harrison. Ooh, by Jim Henson.
By Jim. Wow.
He had a real side yeah. second act as a Western romance writer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, incredible. Samuel. Oh no. Yeah, but that really got me.
Wow. Did you cry?
I cried so much.
In school? Like
at
in public?
School, we were, Lisa and I, first of all, were late to our next class.
Yeah.
And then we were holding each other down the hallway to get to the next class.
Wow, you
and
were
the
devastated.
Teachers in the next class were like, oh my God, what happened?
And you were like, Samuel?
They were like, Samuel died. And they're like, is this a friend of yours? Like, yeah. what? And they're like, oh no, he got caught in the barbed wire. We were absolute messes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Isn't that good, though? Isn't that wonderful?
Cinema. Poetic cinema.
It feels good.
It feels good to cry it out. You got to cry it out.
All right. My next one is my t-shirt is a reference to it. My next one is Jake from The Dark Tower, book one.
Okay.
The Gunslinger.
Okay.
So The Gunslinger was originally published in the Magazine of Science Fiction and Fantasy in segments from 1978 to 1981. The first novel was published in 1982. it becomes a long, like, eight or nine book series. It's like Stephen King's Lord of the Rings. It's like his big, it's also the apex of everything because it has characters from other books.
Yeah.
The villain is the same. The villain, the Man in Black, is also the villain in The Stand. The entity of It is in it.
Yeah. It's sort of like a multiverse.
Yeah. Stephen King is the multiverse, but things don't cross over as much outside of the Dark Tower.
Okay.
And the first book, though, is very, very atmospheric. You don't know. You just know you're in this weird world. That's like, it feels like the past, but also the future. But it's also Western. The Gunslinger is like this cowboy character. Mm. And he comes across this 11-year-old boy who's all by himself named Jake. And he's like this really sweet boy. And Jake doesn't know how he got there. And the gunslinger hypnotizes him. And he gets his backstory, which is he lived in a world similar to ours and died. He died in a car accident or someone pushed him, I forget.
Oh.
And when he died, he came to the Dark Tower world.
Huh.
And he kind of had a shitty dad, I believe. It's been a while since I read this. But I remember feeling devastated because again, it's a lone wolf cub. Like, they have a real paternal relationship. And then at one point, they're, you know, the whole first book, he's tracking the Man in Black. He wants to find the Man in Black and talk to him. And he's chasing the Man in Black, and they're, like, on this, I think they're, like, train tracks or whatever. And it breaks underneath and Jake like falls and he's like holding on. And the gunslinger can either save him but then the Man in Black will get away.
Mm.
And he really wants to get to the Man in Black. So he lets Jake die.
Wow.
And Jake says, "Go then, there are other worlds than these," which is like kind of weirdly out of his character to say that.
Yeah.
But it gets into the whole multiverse thing. They go to Oz in book four.
What?
It's a crazy, it gets crazier and crazier. Stephen King is in it as a character at one point. there's was snitches and lightsabers.
Snitches and lightsabers.
Yeah, there's golden snitches. It gets into a crazy multiverse. But the first book is just super great and atmospheric. And it was one of those things like, I can't believe he's dead. And that the lead character let him die.
Yeah, and that's painful.
Yeah, and he does come back in book three.
Yeah.
But then he dies again at some point.
Oh, no.
I didn't get this far, but I was reading the Wikipedia today. Remember when Stephen King was hit by a car?
Yes. Is that in the book?
Yes. I think he jumps in front of a car to save Stephen King.
Oh, my God.
I think Stephen King becomes like the thing that's holding the whole everything together. It's super weird. But he dies again eventually. But it's also interesting because later on there's a whole book where it's kind of a side quest where they're saving these people, and they do it because he realizes that he's trying to eventually get to the Dark Tower, and he finds that when he helps people, he gets closer. And he realizes letting Jake die was the wrong thing because it kept him from getting to the Dark Tower. Because that's what the Man in Black wanted. Anyway, I was devastated reading it. I remember where I was reading it. I was working at a historical landmark as a tour guide. So I was wearing a puffy shirt and a cape. Yeah. And I was just like, no, he can't really be dead. And he doesn't come back to book three. So all through book two, you're like, can he come back? Or is it the end of book two? Book two is weird because it's like three doors. And he goes through these three different doors to these three different worlds. And the third door, I think, is Jake.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, thank God. Oh, thank God he's back. So that was a hard one for me.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be.
And he has The Shining, Jake.
Jake has The Shining.
Yes, which is a power that people in In the Stephen King universe, yeah. That's a power that people have. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really hope. Suppose there was some weird movie.
There was that movie with Matthew McConaughey,
which was like not based on. It was kind of based on the first book, but also not based on anything.
Yeah.
It was kind of a sequel to the book series as well. It was very weird. Because spoiler alert, it makes a loop. So the last line of the last book is the same as the first line of the first book, which is the man in black fled through the desert and the gunslinger followed. Oh, wow. So the idea is like.
It just never ends.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a song cycle, yeah. Right? Like in the ancient sagas, yeah. Right? Like it would just be a cycle, and you'd constantly do it over.
There's
and over
even
again.
A second edition of The Gunslinger that it's more than just an update. It's meant to be read after the last book because it's slightly different.
Oh.
So it's like this is where he would be now. So anyway. Interesting. Yeah, that was Jake.
Okay.
What you got?
All right. So let's see. This one is another, like, similarly to Legends of the Fall. This is an out of left field one that I cried for 25 minutes.
You timed it?
I know it was longer than 10. I know it was longer than 15 because I was still going. And I came out of my room and my mom was like, are you okay? Like the movie, we haven't been watching this movie for like a while now. Wow. Like you are still going. And I don't know what it was. But it really got me. So the film AI.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we have, it's David, right? Haley yes. Joel Osment. And it's his little story about being like a little surrogate child yeah. while their child is in a coma. And he's a little AI robot. He's like Megan, but much less murderous
yeah.
and just very sweet. And all he wants is to be loved by this woman, his mother, or, you know, like the adoptive mother. But she wants her kid, of course. Yeah.
And the kid says it'd be shitty.
The kid is, he sucks. So, and so they like leave him in the woods, which is
that's
horrible.
The most heartbreaking
that's
scene.
That's devastating.
Because he's like, mom.
Oh,
it's so heartbreaking.
It's so heartbreaking. Because he is mentally a child, yes. right? Like he thinks he is a kid.
Yeah.
So
and then the whole rest of the movie, he's trying to get back to her.
He's trying to get back to her. That's it. The rest of the movie, he tries to get back to this woman, right? Yeah. And he never does. He right. never makes it back to her in her natural life.
Yeah, the weird aliens at the end kind of give him a version of
they
her.
They give him an opportunity, yes.
Yeah.
So, and it's sort of like this whole Pinocchio narrative. Yeah. And but basically
underrated movie, I think.
Underrated, yeah, I think so too. But basically he like gets in some sort of stasis. He is underwater or
he
something.
He kind of breaks.
Yeah. And so he's.
And the world freezes over.
World freezes. It's like. It floods.
Billions
freezes.
Of years later.
Yes. Yeah. And so these like. They look like liquid mercury.
Yeah.
Aliens. Discover
it's
him.
It's unclear whether they're aliens or like evolved.
Or just evolved
AI.
Humans or that they are people or something.
Yeah.
Or that could be AI, sentient AI. That's now taken form, physical form. So they find him and they, you know, defrost him and they boot him up and he's asking for his mother, which is so sad. So then they're like, oh, well, she died.
Yeah.
But, and also Anthony Hopkins is in this one as the narrator. So he comes back around as
class.
Well in this. So they're like, but we have a way that we can bring anyone back, but just for one day. And then when she goes to sleep, she won't wake up again. So he's like, well, yeah, I'll take that option. I would love to have her back. So they bring her back somehow. Mm. They put them back in their like surroundings that they normally would be. And the narration says like, she's like someone who woke up from a dream and she like knows who he is. And is like, oh, yeah, let's do this stuff together. But she keeps getting like a little confused, like as if she's a sleepwalker or something. Mm. Like she's kind of she doesn't really get what's going on, and they don't explain it to her either. Yeah. But they're, but she, you can tell she's like something's off. But
it's all kind of vague to us too.
It's vague to us as an audience, yes, as well. But basically, they have the best day ever.
Yeah,
doing like making a cake and playing games and like everything that he wanted, he got on this day, like the best day of all time. And then at, she was like, "I'm getting sleepy now." So she, and then the narration is very like a fairy tale. Like he had to walk her to her bed, and then she fell asleep, and then he wills himself to die.
Yeah, don't they die together?
They die together.
They like cuddle and die.
They cuddle up, and then he goes to sleep. And he's a robot, so he can't die. But he dies. He makes himself die. I'm going to cry for 25 minutes now.
Yeah, that is a rough movie, huh?
It's so like... it's so pretty.
Yeah.
But horrible things are happening. Like the robots are being hunted and like, all this stuff. And it's it was Kubrick, but he never got to do it. So then Spielberg did it, I guess.
And I feel like it's very Spielbergian.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the way that he treats children in his films. Yeah. And it's all sort of like there's a poignancy to it. There's a whimsy to it. But there's especially with him, he feels so deeply for his mother that it's like, oh. And he never got it.
It's super simple.
It's like, so such a his, simple tale. His motivations are so simple. He just wants to be a real boy. Like, he wants to be her son.
Yeah.
And he finally gets it, so then he dies. Like, he got what he wanted. So he's like, I'm good. I'm out.
But you can't help feeling like this is tragic.
It's so tragic. Yes. You can't help but feel like...
even though it's happy, it's bitter.
It's bittersweet because it's he never got to do this in life, right? So he was sort of robbed of this opportunity, and she didn't really want it. You also get the sense that, like... she felt for him.
Right. She cries when she get when she lets him in the woods, too. Yeah. It's, you, I think the husband was pushing her.
He was pushing her more.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he's dangerous to our actual kid.
Right.
Which realistically, you'd be like, well, yeah, of course, then we have to get rid of this robot boy. Like, if he's going to kill our actual son. And I think, but I did think she cared for him, but not in the way he did. And so I always feel like there's this bittersweetness there, too, because... it's an imbalance of love. Like, she's never going to love him the way he loves
her. It's like a love potion. Like, he's programmed to love her.
Right.
Which is...
and she can't feel for him like it's her own child.
Or she could.
Maybe she could.
It's how you want to interpret.
But the other kid wasn't there, and neither was the dad that we don't like.
It's just him.
It's just the two of them, and that was it.
Yeah, damn. I just saw the movie Companion.
Yes.
Which this reminds me of.
Yeah.
Because it's also a android that's like meant to love, like they actually imprint on you, so like they love you more than anything.
Oh wow.
And it's I don't know, so it's fucked up. Yeah, I want to cry now too. That is a good
it's
one.
It's such a sad. It's so sad. It's so just sad. So sad.
The whole thing is so sad.
The whole movie is sad. Really, yeah, front to back.
It does have an awesome talking teddy bear, though.
I love the talking teddy bear.
Yeah.
But the talking teddy bear is left high and dry at the end. Yeah. He's still going.
Yeah.
They're all dead.
Yeah. There's also a weird android circus where they're, like, killing them for fun. It's crazy.
That's crazy. There's the gigolos.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that city that's, like, half immersed. And I was like, is this later on or is this actually at the same time as David's... family,
right,
or this
right.
Is this many years later? Because
he doesn't age or anything,
right?
So
you
it could
don't
be,
you don't get a sense.
It's
how
like
much time
the story time is like so long.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Well, that's a good one. That's
that,
a really
it was
good
really
one.
Really devastating.
My what am I up to? 1, 2, 3. I've got 2 left. So my next one is Cassie, played by Carey Mulligan from A Promising Young Woman.
Okay, I haven't seen this movie.
Do you remember the trailer?
I do. She looks like Harley Quinn in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Carey Mulligan is Cassie, and she was in... brief synopsis. She was trying to become a doctor. She was in medical school, and her best friend is raped by a group of guys, and she brings them to court, but the guys have high-powered lawyers, and the school's behind the guys, and no one believes her, and she's shamed, and she ends up killing herself. Mm. So, and then Carey Mulligan is just this deep grief, this deep depression, and also just so mad at the world. Mm. So she leaves medical school, and she becomes like almost like a vigilante where she'll go, like in the first scene, she's at a bar pretending to be drunk so a guy can take her home.
I remember this from the trailer where she's like, I said stop, where all of a sudden
He's not clear. She's not drunk. Yeah. And then he's like, no, I'm a nice guy. And she's like, no, you're not. You're a rapist. And she just, she, I don't think she kills them, but she like, she does weird shit to them.
Yeah.
Then she, there's a great scene where she fucks over the dean who turned against the girl and she takes the, she kidnaps the dean's daughter and brings her to, well, she brings her to someplace safe, but she tells the dean that she brought her to a party, like a keg party in the dorms.
Right.
And she was like, oh, well, you don't trust what goes on in the dorms? It's so good.
Right. Like, if it's all okay, then why wouldn't this be okay it's a with great your movie. Daughter? So that means you know that it's not okay.
The ending is very controversial.
Okay.
Because it ends with the main rapist is getting married, and he's like a bro. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's his bachelorette party, and she goes like pretending to be a stripper and she gets him in the bedroom and she handcuffs him and she's going to carve the girl's name in his chest so he's forever branded with her name.
Yeah.
And she handcuffs him, but then he gets an arm loose and he takes a pillow and he suffocates her and he kills her. She dies. Wow.
And you've been following her the whole movie.
Yes.
She's the hero. Wow.
And by the way, this is controversial. Some people, and I think I'm in this camp, some people absolutely hate this because they're like, why did she have to die for this to happen? Like, the movie was going along such a good, like, obviously, okay, you can have some struggle, whatever, but it really bummed people out. Like, why did she have to die?
Yeah.
She dies, and then the next thing, they burn her body.
They burn her?
Yeah, it's crazy. Because he's suffocating her, and it's like one unbroken shot.
It takes a long time to suffocate someone.
Yeah, it's one unbroken shot.
I know.
And you hear her okay. And you hear her like muffling. It's just,
it's brutal.
It's brutal to watch. And this is really one where I was like, this can't be.
Right. She's gonna this come back somehow.
She's gonna come back. Yeah, or this was part of her plan.
It's gonna be Patricia Arquette in True Romance. Like, she's gonna. She's licked, but she's got him.
Or it's some weird fantasy. It wasn't until like the next scene where they're like burning her that I'm like, wow, she's
gone
dead.
For good. Yeah.
And I was loving the movie up to that point. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, do I hate this movie now? Or is it great that it's making me feel this bad?
Yeah.
And then you find out that she had a plan, which was like, if she were to die, the video that she found of the rape would be sent to all, like, everyone's cell phone. So it's the wedding. It's the guy's wedding. Mm-hmm. And then everyone there gets the video of him raping the girl, and then the cops come and arrest him for murder.
Oh, it's very cruel intentions.
So she kind of wins at the end.
Yeah.
Why'd she have to die?
Yeah.
It's a bummer. It was a hard one for me. I was like, fuck.
I almost find maybe they just couldn't write a way out for her, because then she is guilty of crimes at that point. So then was she going to go to jail also?
But this is the problem. Like, females, if it were male, they wouldn't have died. Like, females always have to suffer pain. Even, like, female superheroes, like, they always have to suffer so much more. It's, like, it's such a weird thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
And if you track it in movies, like, action movies that feature a female lead, that they're, like, suffering.
Yeah, they have to.
They have to take beating after beating. Yeah.
It's rough. It's rough. But what's your next one?
Okay. So, you know, I actually changed horses midstream on this one.
Sure.
Because I was going to do Dobby from Harry Potter. Yeah. Because it's such a gut punch.
Yeah.
He's so innocent. He's such a great character. There's that, like, triumph of him coming
back. You mean in the book?
I think in both.
Because I got to tell you, as someone who's only seen the films, mm-hmm. it always felt to me like he wasn't as big enough of a character to feel the way that they want me to feel.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the emotional resonance of his death in the films is really only coming from a history with him in the books.
Right, because there's more of him in the books, right? Yeah.
But there is that scene in the house where it's like this very triumphant, he's like returning to the scene of his captivity and he's like, no, I'm magic. I'm more powerful than you. And, like, you're not going to capture my friends. Like, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
And then, like, what a beautiful place to be among friends. Oh, yeah. It's, like, very sad. But I'm actually not going to choose Dobby. Oh, my God. There's a man in the room and he's got a mustache.
Bill, a mustache man sneezed and I don't feel comfortable.
No.
I feel aggressed upon.
I feel aggressed right now. But I just, not too long ago, finished The Crystal Cave, which is a Merlin book. And I'm going to choose Dumbledore.
Whoa.
Because this was truly like world shaking, right?
Yeah.
Now, had I been interested in Arthurian legends.
The minute he walked into a cave, he would have been, like, bitch, oh, I know where this is going. There.
Yeah. So like, we should have realized like, okay, Harry is Arthur. Dumbledore is Merlin.
But you didn't know that. You were dumb.
I didn't know. I was a big old dummy. But I did have the death spoiled before reading the book because there was that famous, it was probably like
video.
The year YouTube came out of the kids driving past like, Snape kills Dumbledore. No, you bitch.
It's like goes down in history as like the greatest spoiler
it's
of all time.
It's the greatest spoiler.
The greatest moment anything's ever been spoiled.
And guess what? I didn't believe it. I was like, no, he didn't. I don't care. They can't didn't be. Read it yet. It can't be.
Can't
Snape
be.
Killed Dumbledore. What? That's so dumb. He's right. Working for them. Like, what are you talking? He's a double agent. What? And let me tell you, she did not. Noted turf. J.K. Rowling did not unveil her grand scheme.
Yeah.
Until later, much later. So you go through like a whole book thinking like Snape is a villain. Like he triple crossed. Right.
Yeah.
And so it was this devastating moment. I'm like, oh, well, how the hell is he going to beat Voldemort now? He's lost his like, it's the Gandalf of it all. But Gandalf came back.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I guess Dumbledore's got to come back.
Right.
I mean, he does, I guess, in that
but Dumbledore's,
weird afterlife scene.
He was always there to protect him. And it's like, well, now we're really
now
fucked.
We're
now
lost.
We're really, really vulnerable.
Now we're vulnerable. It's just us.
We're not in the school anymore. The school's not a safe place anymore.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the darkest time, right?
Yeah.
Like when we're like, oh God, okay, things are going to get really bad before they get good. Or maybe they won't get good again. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was a real devastating one that I was totally in denial about until I read it. And I was like, well, there it is. Maybe he'll be back. And then never comes back. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
And of course now we know like, oh yeah, well he died and Snape is actually a hero or whatever it is. But at the time we did not.
So it's not just the death. It's the, which feels like a heel turn from someone, a character you like.
It feels like a heel turn from this character who, you know, you're like, wow, what a hero. He's risking it all. But also the vulnerability of it. Like, it is like a parent dying. And Harry's already lost his parents. So he's already been vulnerable his whole life. But you're really out there now. Like, no one's going to help you. It's just you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which book is that?
Is it The Half-Blood Prince? It's Half-Blood Prince. He's read them more recently than I have because he read them as an adult. And now, although Half-Blood Prince might have come out in my young adulthood, I don't know. But I haven't reread them in like a very long time. But yeah, that was a big one.
That's a big one. I imagine that would be in many people's lists.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, my last one.
Oh, do you have any
mentions? I didn't write down any honorable mentions. Did I have any?
I have a couple.
Do you want to give some?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so these two are like coming of age childhood ones. Artax in The Neverending Story.
Yeah.
Horse is getting stuck in the mud. He's like, please, Artax, fight.
Yeah.
Like, you can't give in to the, the nothing.
Yeah.
You can't let, it's like the horse is depressed. So it's dying of depression.
He's like,
in a mud pit.
Yeah.
That's
what depression feels like. It's a good visual.
Okay, the ant in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
The ant.
They love the ant. The ant fights the scorpion and dies. But it dies defending them. It dies protecting them. That was one as a kid where I was like, that poor little ant.
Right.
In Titanic, that montage of the kids being put to bed and the old couple cuddling and just like knowing that they are doomed, that they can't get out. So they're just going to bed. I mean, haven't you felt that way? Like, this is a terrible situation. I just got to go to bed.
Yeah. It's wholesome and heartbreaking to say we're going to die together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's love.
And then, was I going to use this one as an honorable mention I'm going to use this one as an honorable mention. I'm going to switch them. Bing Bong from Inside Out.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
That's a rough one. Because is it a death in the sense that he's a figment of her imagination? No, yes, because he's going away. He's never
But he also
back.
Allows it to happen.
He does. He sacrifices himself
so
that Riley can have her happiness back, her joy back. Because otherwise, if he doesn't, she'll never be happy again.
Yeah.
And he wants her to be happy.
Bing Bong.
Bing Bong. Love that's it. That was I was crying like a little baby.
I don't know if going back to I think you asked me if I cried when Jake died. I don't know if I did, actually. In, you know, I'm very weird. Like, I can cry over books and movies and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I cry in pop culture more than I cry in my real life when people die, which is crazy. Yes,
when real people die, I don't cry. Unless they're dogs. And then I cry a lot.
Well, I'm getting to my last one. But
okay. Oh, okay. All right. So I thought the last one is where you and I might actually cross over. But
oh, okay. No, mine's a dog.
Mine is not a dog. My last one.
Okay.
Is Tara from Buffy.
Oh.
Played by Amber Benson.
Yeah.
It's season 6, episode 19, Seeing Red.
Okay.
Tara is killed by a stray bullet shot by Warren, one of the three human enemies of that season.
Yes.
He's trying to shoot Buffy, and he kind of like runs away like cowardly shooting. And one just goes through the window and through Tara, and blood goes onto Willow's shirt, and Tara just goes, oh, your shirt. Well,
yeah, I remember.
And then dies, not even like just, doesn't just even, like, dies immediately.
That she got shot.
And yeah, the show fucked us because she had been like a main character for mm-hmm. a while, but they never put her in the opening credits. And then this was the first episode where they put her in the opening credits. So any her. Fan of the show was like, oh, cool, she's finally in the opening credits. And that's the episode they kill her. And like, and I also almost thought about putting Joyce in here too.
Yes. Oh my God. You just reminded me of that.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I wanted. What? I thought you were going to put Joyce. No. It's okay. Buffy's we have to discuss Joyce. We have to. It's not on my list, but we have to.
Similar to Joyce, the show was always really good with she's this great superhero, and when it comes to demons and ghosts and shit, she was great. But human frailty, like human things,
yes,
you can't control.
She can't defeat. Yeah.
Like this, and that's what's so. I mean, the later seasons are, you know, you could argue about whether they're good or not, but it's an interesting idea that there was always a big bad, and the big bad of this season are like human men.
Yeah.
And they're like nerds. They're like incel guys.
Yeah.
And he's just, and like, you know, she could fight off, she could save the world, but this guy's just got a handgun, like a regular gun.
Yeah.
And Buffy does get shot, which I forgot about, but she lives. But fucking Tara just gets it. She just gets it right through the chest, and it's senseless. Yeah. And it's so human and scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big one. That truly shocked the fuck out of me.
Joyce. Okay. Joyce has an aneurysm and dies on the couch. Buffy comes downstairs in the morning and finds her.
We don't see it though. We see Buffy finding her.
We see Buffy find her.
Buffy's mom, if you're not familiar.
So this is Buffy's mom. And it's so, like, it's not an enemy she can fight. It's already happened. She can't save her.
It was just an aneurysm.
It's just an aneurysm.
Sometimes young people just die for no reason.
Yeah. And it's so devastating because it cuts to the credits.
And she says, yeah.
She goes, Mommy?
Yeah.
It's like, oh. Yeah. It's so sad. Because she's like, Mom? And then, like, it's the confusion, right? It's like the denial, the bargaining, like all of that in just a couple of moms. Right?
Yeah.
But it's like mom, like confusion, right?
Yeah.
And then mom, like concern. And then the sad, like the impact of it hitting you, being like mom, and then mommy. Like, like please come back.
Yeah. It's so.
And she's so at odds with Joyce. She's so at odds with Joyce throughout the
series. At that point, Joyce knew she was a slayer, though.
Yeah, she did. And they were sort of coming around to an understanding and even support, right? And then she's gone.
That's where the show was good.
Yeah.
Life would, like, real life. It's just random and fucking shitty.
Yeah. That would always get me when in a book or in a film, when someone would just die and it didn't serve the plot at all. And it was just like they got cholera. Like that just happened. And sometimes you have just the have love aneurysms. Of your life for like a minute. Like you'd be with them for like a month and then they just died and there's nothing you could do. So that, that stuff always gets it. I'm like, fuck, like life is, well, it's the Patton Oswalt thing of like, life is chaos, be kind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, what a brilliant comic, but like saying like, and then my wife won the argument in the worst possible way. It just,
Yeah.
It's chaos. You gotta be kind.
Yeah.
All right.
Tara.
Yeah.
We hardly knew ye.
I felt like she kind of never gave us much.
Well, her whole she was kind of like,
she was shy.
Yeah. And then that leads to a story arc of, it's called Seeing Red because Willow goes full on crazy demon witch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hated that costume. It's like purple and she had like black hair and black big
eyeballs.
It gets
so weird later on in that show.
Well, is that the one where the landlord from New Girl is the magic drug dealer and she's getting like her magic from him? And
that eventually happens.
Okay.
There's also a shark man. A lot of people, I think it's a shark man.
I don't remember the shark man.
I think a lot of people see that as like, that's the real jump the shark
that's
moment.
That's the jump the shark.
Like, why is there a shark man?
Oh my God.
I gotta wait. Is it a shark man? I gotta get Google this. I'm Buffy shark man?
Buffy. Bro. Yeah. Okay. There's a shark man.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
His name is Bro-os.
Yeah.
Bro-os.
Anyway, I hope the new show is
the
good.
The fucking shark man. Oh my God. He's giving shark thumbs up.
Yeah, it
tell
sucks.
Tell me why.
It sucks a lot.
Tell me why is this happening? Oh, that's so funny. Why I've eradicated this from my mind. I don't remember the shark man in Buffy. Yeah. But I will say Pedro Pascal is on Buffy.
Yes, he is.
Delightful.
Yes, he is.
All right. My final one. Yeah. And this is because I actually was not devastated by this death. So this is, but I just thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I know, I was sad. I was saddened by it. But it was just so funny that the reaction the theater had to this death. So the film I Am Legend.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Will Smith, it's like basically just a solo project. He's in the city. He's like the sole survivor of this plague. He has a beautiful German shepherd named Sam. Sam's been going everywhere with them. This is his buddy. And Sam defends him from these creatures and is like, when he gets strung up by his ankle, like Sam's waiting there for him and like, you know, trying to wake him up. And also Sam is a puppy that he got for his daughter. Mm. And she wanted him to have the puppy while she was getting out of the city with her mother and was like, no, the puppy will keep you company. So it's sort of like a remnant of his child too, like having this dog. And basically Sam gets infected while defending him.
Oh, good boy.
Good boy. So he's in the lab, like he brings Sam back to the lab with him or his like safe house and is like trying everything to like cure the dog. But the dog is dying and is like breathing really heavily. Ugh. And he's holding the dog and like it's a big German shepherd, but he's holding her. Well, her. We don't know that at the time. And I don't know what it was, but everyone had the same reaction to this where he's like, Sam. Samantha, and the whole theater went, oh, it's a girl dog.
Now it's even sadder.
It's even worse that it's a girl. And it's just, we all did the same thing. All of us decided that it was worse that it was a girl dog that was dying.
Which is true.
And I just think it's so funny.
Yeah.
Because other people have talked to me about it. And like, and then when they say Samantha, it's like, oh my God, it's been a girl dog this whole time.
Yeah.
It's a little girl dog. Yes, and sadly, Sam dies, succumbs to the infection. But it's very sad. This like his one. I mean, he loses his mind after the dog dies because this is his one tether to reality, to life. And you know, a dog is a man's best friend. But this was a girl dog.
I've never seen the John Wick movies, but apparently, like it all starts because someone kills his dog and he just flips out.
He loses it. It's
I mean, I get it.
Yeah, totally. It's just the Samantha.
That's so funny. Dogs dying is
a real bummer.
It's the worst.
Because they don't know nothing.
I think
silly
most,
little dogs.
I know. I think the most I ever cried genuinely in my life was when my dog Lucy died. I never cried so openly in public. I like bawled like an old Italian widow. I thanked her. Because she, me, Anthony, and my dad were there when they put her down.
Yes. Anthony told me that.
I was like nose to nose with her. And as she went, I said, thank you.
Oh.
It's rough.
Man.
It's rough. But anyway.
And she was a girl dog.
She was. Lucy was a girl dog.
So it's even worse.
Yeah. It's purer.
It's
purer.
Pure.
Yeah.
They get their periods all over the place.
Yeah. Boy, I would not have guessed that. I Am Legend.
Samantha.
Yeah. I think I've seen that movie once.
That's fine.
That's about it, right?
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's a good. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, some of the other ones that people say, I feel like you could see it coming. I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of times you could see things coming, I feel. Like I wasn't... A lot of people are like, oh, when Han Solo died in Force Awakens, it's like, but clearly he was going to.
Yeah.
He was Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan dies. Yeah. So that wall had to happen. Like, you know, it's when it's, you know... But then some people argue, though, when it's shocking for no reason, like... If it's somebody dies and it's like, why did they have to die? Like, it was shocking for no reason.
That's something in Rise of Skywalker that they did that I was like, what? And then they corrected it immediately. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, Chewbacca.
With Chewie. And I was like, but wait, we didn't even see him. Like, what? We're going to get rid of this character like that?
So
I
would have
been pissed if it was real.
Right.
But then I was pissed because it was so dumb. Like, oh, he was on another one that we didn't see. Like, what? That's even dumber. I was just so mad that whole movie.
Everything about that movie sucks so hard.
Everything. Everything. It's like Beautiful Corpse. Is that it? Exquisite Corpse?
Yes.
It's like Exquisite Corpse, except it was a, you know, like $1 billion.
Yeah. Oh, that movie sucks.
Shitty, shitty corpse.
Yeah.
Not even a girl dog corpse.
Yeah. Which are the best corpses?
Those are the best corpses.
What? Yeah. This was it. I don't think this was a sad episode.
No.
You know, it feels good to, feel.
It does feel good to feel, and not to get too deep on you, but I was reading this whole thing this week about how grief is so important to a full life experience.
Sure.
And that we are so shielded, and like we put up walls, and essentially, I'm holding up my phone right now. Like,
yeah.
We kind of numb ourselves through like, there's like layers between us and whatever it is. And we try to like keep things at arm's length and not feel emotions or like push through them. Right.
Yeah.
And, like, keep working, be good capitalists or whatever, like keep going. And that truly engaging with grief and sorrow is like very scary, but also by doing it, it allows us to experience the, like the full spectrum of human emotion.
Yeah.
And it also makes our joys that much better
because
we realize, you know, that sort of like memento mori thing of you have to have the bitter to have the sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Grief is such an interesting thing because you don't really get over it. It just, it just kind of gets small. You compartmentalize.
The house of your life becomes bigger.
Right.
And it's still a room.
You just carry it with you.
It's just not the biggest room.
Right.
Yeah. It'll always be there.
I've said this on the podcast before, but my favorite quote about death is from Susan Sontag. Mm-hmm. And she said, death is the opposite of everything.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's just death, despite being the most natural fucking thing, it doesn't make sense to us. Our brains don't make sense of it. Because we think in continuity. We think in timelines. Mm-hmm. And someone not being anymore.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make sense to us.
That vanishing of a person.
It doesn't make sense to us at all.
It's so violently traumatic to our psyche, right? To like not have a person in this world anymore.
Yeah.
Or an animal or whatever it is. It's like such a short time to be here, such a long time to not be here. Consider all the time before us, right? And all the time that's going to be after us.
You're right.
And what a tiny little time that we are here.
Right.
Even if we live a long life, even if we're 100, that's still such a short time in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, yeah.
To be around.
I thought of a good honorable mention.
Oh, okay.
It's the Dutch movie The Vanishing.
Okay.
Which was also remade in America.
Yes, with Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
I saw the
American
version.
I think the American one made it a happy ending, which is
it
kills
it.
It
did make it a happy ending. That's right.
In The Vanishing, and I also, as a man in a relationship, I think about this all the time. Mm. It's a husband and wife. They're just like on a trip and he's like goes in to get gas or something. They're whatever. He goes and he comes out and he's like, where's my wife? And like, it starts off pretty normal. Like, I can't find my wife. And then like, as the minutes go on, it's like, he's more like, holy shit, like, where's my wife? And then years go on. He never finds her.
Crazy.
And he doesn't give up the hope of, is she alive? What happened? And it's just the pain of that. And then
that open-ended grief is so much worse than death.
Yeah.
Right? Because at least there's a finality, like, you know, there's closure. Death is just open. It's like, she could be alive. She could be. Should I be grieving?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like you're half grieving, but then half you turn that into this crazy vigilance to find them.
Right.
And then
because you don't want to feel like you gave up.
He gets a letter from a guy who's like, I'm a sociopath. I'm a serial killer. Oh, not a serial killer. He only did it once. This was an experiment for him. He's like, I killed your wife. But oh, if you call...
It was not Julianne Moore. It was Gerard Butler and someone else that I don't know.
But the guy's like, listen, you can call the cops on me, but then I'll never tell you what happened to your wife. If you want this question answered, if you want to know what happened to your wife, you have to come and meet me and don't tell the cops, whatever. If anything goes awry, I'm never going to tell you.
Yeah.
You'll die never knowing. And then he goes with him, he follows him, whatever. And he's like, I buried your wife alive. And then he buries the guy alive.
And then he buries the husband alive.
Yes, and that's the end. They both get buried alive. Wow. The American one, I think, makes it.
If it's Gerard Butler, I know that heads are getting smashed. Yeah. Like,
I don't know if they both still live or just the guy lives, but it's such a. It's also one of the best depictions of a killer because he's like the most normal guy. Mm-hmm. He's just a guy with a wife and kid, and it's just like his hobby. It's like. He kills animals when he's young and he's like, oh, I don't have empathy. Interesting. And then he's like, you know, I wonder if one day I could just kill a person. And it's just like a little project. Mm-hmm. And he does it. He just kidnaps her and kills her. So I do it all the time. Like, you know, like I'll be like out and like Jen goes to the bathroom or I go to the bathroom. And I'm like, oh, what if I couldn't find Jen right now?
Right.
And I couldn't. And I just had no idea where she went. What more of a nightmare could that be?
Well, yeah. I mean... We're so hypervigilant with our kids because we're so terrified of that happening.
Yeah, right? Sure.
But I don't think of it as like another adult disappearing, right? Like that doesn't even occur to me because I'm so focused on keeping my kids from disappearing.
How could you ever think or talk about anything else ever?
Yeah.
How could that if your partner just disappeared?
Yeah, no.
You're supposed to like live more?
I'd be like, okay, very funny. The joke's over. It's been 2 years. Please come out wherever you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucked up. Anyway. So we did get to a dark place.
We did. Eventually, we got there.
This has been PCMC Pop Culture Man Show and your feel-good podcast. Janine, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for bringing me
your sad stories and your sad life.
Well, that's it. All my crying.
Samuel.
Oh, Samuel.
We ended our episode.
And just like all these people have.
We must end.
Go bye-bye.